The final topic for this afternoon is by Michael Tennyson, Julie Main, and Lauren Rudolph of Evangel University. And the topic is strategies supporting culturally competent evolution education.
It's the remote.
Right here.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. We're honored and grateful to be here at this ASA meeting. I would say, I'll speak for my colleague, Lauren Rudolph, that neither of us are thought to be experts on all the things we're gonna talk about, but we've been working really hard to become better at what we do, and we'd like to share some things that we have found that have helped us. We want to thank the Evangel University Institutional Research Board to underwrite some of the work we're going to share. Gloria Deo Academy, which was the Christian high school that Lauren's been teaching at to support her work, and the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, which supported some grant funding for some collaborations I was involved with, too.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I just wanted to share briefly a little bit of my story and why I'm so passionate about this. I grew up in a conservative Christian home, you know, attended church 3 days a week, went to Christian high school, Christian college, and although I was never maybe explicitly taught a certain view of creation, I definitely picked up from my surroundings that evolution was bad. So as I continued through my education, I just started getting more curious. I was never really taught what the theory of evolution said. And so in graduate school, I took an evolution course at a state university. And I had an experience there in the first few weeks of that course where my professor at the state school addressed some of these concerns. He used some culturally competent strategies that were really impactful to me. It helped me to lower my defensive wall that went up and feel comfortable listening to and learning about evolution. And that just kind of set me on this course for learning more and more. And now, as a biology educator for dual enrollment students and college students, really trying to make an effort to be sensitive to where my students are coming from so that they can really learn evolution and biology.
My story is almost the flip side of Lauren's. I was an agnostic through college and just bought into the mainstream, you know, evolution story all the way, and then became a Christian during college, and then had to navigate the troubled waters of incorporating Christian faith with the science evolution meta narrative. And it was difficult at times. I've had ups and downs, but overall I met some people who were Christ followers and scientists. A lot of my growth later on, of course, occurred through meetings like these that we're at today. We share the same mission that we would like to encourage our students to reach a coherent view of their faith and science.
So we both teach, our classrooms are primarily Christian students working at Christian institutions. And so particularly when it comes to the concept of evolution in biology classes, our question is, why are Christian students so resistant to evolution, evolutionary theory? And there's been a lot of work around this in the last decade or so, but recently, just in the last couple years, some work done by Barnes and Brownell and colleagues, they've identified that the most significant indicator of a student's acceptance of evolution is their perceived conflict between evolution and their Christian faith. They've identified that this is an even more significant predictor than the religiosity of students and even their level of understanding, which was kind of the area of most research previous to this. And so that's kind of this big hurdle for a lot of our conservative Christian students.
So this conflict that students come to the classroom with is been fostered by some approaches that haven't worked really well in education. First of all, many students have the false belief that evolution is atheistic. They've conflated theism and atheism with evolution, right? And this leads to this false dichotomy, which I was actually told as a new convert evolutionist, that Mike, you can either accept the evolution story or Jesus. You can't really have both. And a lot of our students are still in that place. A lot of our students, Evangel University is the National University of the Assemblies of God, which is a very conservative religious group, as you can imagine. And so many of our students come to us with the idea that you should just embrace a plain reading of scriptures, right? And so we would call most of them biblical literalists. And the Bible is not meant to be difficult to understand. It was meant to be easily understood by anybody who would read it. And a consequence of biblical literalism often leads to a young earth creationist viewpoint. So many of our students also come to the biology classroom and wanting to learn about evolution as young earth creationists.
So our objective, with this in mind, being that this primary hurdle for many of our students is this perceived conflict between evolution and their faith, our objective as biology educators in this space is to help students reduce this perceived conflict without feeling like they have to compromise their faith in any way or reduce this term religiosity. So that's kind of been our goal as we approach this in the classroom.
But before many evolution educators have learned about cultural competence, we've tried many other methods. And most of these methods, the first method, which is to choose between faith and evolution, which I was told by my new pastor, Coyne, Ham, and Dawkins have all argued that it is a choice between evolution and faith. This leads either to an abandonment of the faith that a person has come to the table with or also misuse of science. Another approach to teaching evolution has been really emphasized a lot in the literature is, well, let's just educate these students on the overwhelming bucket of evidence for evolution. And of course, any reasonable person would embrace this concept. And no, we don't need to take into account what attitudes and beliefs students have when they come to the table to gorge on the bucket. And it turns out that researchers are finding that just increased knowledge of the facts or evidences for evolution isn't enough to increase acceptance of evolutionary theory. And a unintended consequence is that many religious students report in these studies that they feel excluded and alienated in the classroom.
So a better approach that is emerging is this idea of cultural competence. And kind of basically, if we were to boil it down to at its core, is just really being intentional about creating a safe space for students to learn so that educators can effectively communicate the content and students are receptive and open to learning it. And so we've just listed a few key factors that help to create this safe environment. So trying not to either overtly or unintentionally demonstrate prejudice towards students who share their views that maybe you disagree with as an educator, but really listening to them so that they don't feel ostracized or excluded. Really making an effort to affirm the beliefs and the worldviews of our students so that they know that we are not here to threaten their faith in any way. So really listening to that. And also something I know I try to do is to really model humility and curiosity for my students so that they can see how that's done and hopefully be inspired to do the same as we get into a topic that can sometimes be controversial.
So Barnes and Brownell in 2017, a pretty significant paper, coined the phrase religious cultural competence in education, evolution education, or RECE. And so we'd like to share with you some of their main recommendations and then also ways that we've taken these ideas and applied them in the evolution classroom. So the first recommendation is that when you're teaching evolution, you must acknowledge that students, many students will have a perceived conflict between their faith and what they're going to learn. Not all students, but many will.
A second strategy is to encourage students to explore their own personal views. So whether that's through class discussions or reflection assignments or journal entries, encouraging students to be introspective and thinking about what do I believe, why do I believe it, can also be really helpful.
Third recommendation was to teach overtly the nature and limitations of science.
Fourth, outlining the spectrum of viewpoints. A lot of students, because of this perceived conflict, they have an understanding that it's one or the other. There's only two options. And so really talking through that there are different, there's a variety of viewpoints that are held on the issue or the topic of evolution, ranging from young earth creationism to atheistic evolution and all points in between, and providing examples of different Christian perspectives on it.
And then after learning about the different examples of categories of belief, we need to provide role models, so exemplars of the different views. So we need to highlight their recommendations, that we highlight religious leaders who have embraced science and scientific leaders who have embraced religion.
And lastly, their sixth recommendation is to highlight how evolution and the Christian faith can be compatible. How can they work together, provide students with tools to help them integrate these things in their own life? So we're going to share just a few practical assignments, things that we use in our classrooms that we have found to be really successful that kind of meet these culturally competent strategies. Something that I like to do when I start my evolution unit is to do a classic KWL chart, which is really popular in education. But this just gets students to think about what do they already know or think they know about origins, about creation and evolution. And then in the W column, what do they want to know? What are some questions they have? What are they curious about? Maybe they have some questions that they've been afraid to ask that they would like to learn more about. And then as we work through our unit, they have a space to write down things that they have learned. So this assignment meets those first two culturally competent strategies suggested by Barnes and Brownell. And I often have discussions, class discussions around this as well, so that students can also learn from each other and see where each other are coming from. Another class discussion I like to do, I call this God's Two Books. And I know that this idea is pretty popular. But this idea that God reveals himself to us in different ways. And so I give students this table or this chart, but I leave it blank. And we read some excerpts of different things. We read the Belgic Confession, which outlines this idea. We read Romans 1:20, and we discuss the ideas there. What do we think it means? And then we walk through this chart to help them organize these ideas and concepts. So this idea that God reveals himself to us through scripture, but he also reveals himself to us through his creation, the physical world. And when we study the physical world, that's science. When we study scripture and draw conclusions about God, we might put that in the category of theology. So both theology and science are ways of learning about God. So how can we get them to work together instead of being in conflict with each other? So this, again, kind of hits that last strategy of highlighting the compatibility. How can we get theology and science to work together if they're both ways of learning about God? They cannot be in conflict. Another activity I do, this is a little more on the philosophy side, but this just question of what is truth? When we say something is true, what do we mean? And so I like to have students read, we read one of Aesop's fables together in class, and then I just simply ask them, is this true? And oftentimes they say yes. I say, well, what do you mean by that? Like, how is this true? And so we kind of get to parsing out the difference between fact truths, conclusions that we draw about physical reality, objective truths, maybe are different from what something means. When we read something or look at a piece of art, we're interpreting that and it means something to us, it resonates with us. And then also this category of wisdom truth. How do we apply what we've learned and actually live it out in our life? So we start with Aesop's fables, and then we go to Genesis chapter 1 and try to identify what are some different categories of truth that we can find here. So again, this is meeting a couple of those strategies, acknowledging this perceived conflict and also highlighting how can science and faith work together.
In several of my courses, I've used a prompt where I've had students, before we engage with the material at all, to write a 500-word essay summarizing really the rub occurs mostly with human evolution. So I asked them to write a unit, an essay on when do you think and how did humans arise? Just cold. Then I have given them access or given them the links to read about the young Earth model. So that would be going to the Answers in Genesis website. And then going to Reasons to Believe and read about the old Earth creationist viewpoint on human origins, and then to BioLogos for the evolutionary creationist perspective. And then there's a discussion. So students go away and do this, then we come back together, and in class they share some of their findings. And then the third, the final concluding part of the exercise is, so I have the students now reread the essay you wrote before you encountered this material, and now indicate any views that you've changed as a result. And so this deals with the items that Barnes and Brunel suggested of exploring your own personal views and provide some role models, because they're reading the writings of eminent scientists who are attempting to integrate faith and science. Lauren, you need to tell us about how you use Legos in your college biology classroom. Okay.
This is more of a hands-on interactive activity, and this was adapted from the Rico Evo research group developed this activity, which is a really great way to teach the nature of science and the limitations of science. So what we do is we have some small Lego models inside of opaque cloth bags, and so students can reach their hands in, but they cannot see the Lego model, and then they have a small collection of loose Legos. And so what they're trying to do is replicate, rebuild an exact replica of the model that they can feel inside the bag. And so we just talk about how science is limited by the devices we use to make measurements and observations. And so based on the data that we have in science, we're trying to piece together the best explanatory model that we can that makes sense of the evidence. And so that's kind of what a scientific theory is. But we can never really like open up the curtain and look behind the curtain to see, does this explanatory model 100% match objective ultimate reality? And so it's just a great kind of hands-on interactive way to teach that.
Can't feel color, can we?
No, we cannot feel color. So there's usually a couple pieces that are out of place. But again, there's no way for students to know what color the blocks are. And so it's just a really great way to talk through the nature of science and the limitations of science. Okay, I also have some remarks from some of my high school students. In encouraging this reflection and students to think through their personal views, I have lots of reflection assignments and class discussions. And so I have some remarks from students at the beginning of the unit and then what they were saying at the end of the unit. And so for this student at the very beginning, he said, "Evolution is a complete and total load of crap." Halfway through the unit, he was still saying, "Evolution is a complete sham." At the end of the unit, he said, "I learned that there are Christian evolutionists out there, and I can now be more accepting of people with evolutionists' beliefs." So we can see this shift in his attitude and his perception of the relationship between evolution and faith. Another student at the beginning of the unit said, "Evolution is false." And at the end, she said, "I didn't realize that there's a creationist view that believes in evolution. It was nice to learn that evolution isn't evil and that it's okay to believe in it. I can believe in evolution and still be a Christian." And lastly, this student said at the beginning of the unit, evolution is a process used by secular scientists to deny the existence of God. Halfway through, evolution is false, creation is true. And at the end of our unit, he said, previously, I always thought that evolutionists were atheists. But now I more clearly realize that not everyone who believes in the theory of evolution is an atheist. Some Christians believe in it and are not less Christian for doing so. So these are just a few examples, some of these from some of my staunchest fundamentalist young earth creationist students, just showing this apparent success of our objective to help students reduce this perceived conflict between evolution and their faith. And if that is one of the primary hurdles to evolution acceptance, then helping them get over that hurdle and shift their perspective is a really big win in my book.
Without a reduction in their commitment to their faith at the same time. So we shared with you this material because in many ways we're like the leper who got healed, and you all lepers need to get the healing from Jesus too. And if this is new to you, awesome. If you already know about it, awesome. But this is not brand new material. There are quite a few groups that have been involved in this for a while. Your professor of evolution, who exercised cultural competence amazingly, was sensitive to people of faith in his classroom. And so there are secular evolution educators that are already doing this. The Smithsonian Institution, with their Human Origins Project, is working on developing and has successfully developed a lot of culturally sensitive materials for people of faith to read about human evolution. BioLogos, look at their publications a lot. The AAAS Doser Program has for a long time been encouraging an engagement of people with faith with science in a safe and nurturing, at least a safe environment. And there's a developing group called the RICO EVO Research Group out of BYU, headed up by Jamie Jensen, that is making available a lot of really useful materials for evolution educators to teach in this culturally competent manner. Lauren's gonna tell us more, but I would like to add one comment that I don't think we hit adequately, and that was the necessity of this whole process to provide a safe environment for students to explore controversial ideas. And it requires sensitivity on the part of the professor to the fears of the students, which are obviously involved with losing their faith, perhaps, or embracing a lie. And we have to be super careful that students can lower their barrier of concern enough to actually engage cognitively with the information.
Mm-hmm. We just have our email addresses up there. We could both talk about this for hours. So this is just a short 20-minute snippet. So we'd love to hear from you. And then this QR code also will take you to a Google Drive folder where we've included the assignments I shared with you today, as well as some other assignments, as well as our references for this presentation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, for those of us in this discussion, there will be questions.
Thank you. This is really fantastic. I'm curious if you've shared this either formally or informally with secular teachers and what their response is.
I'm involved in a organization called the Broader Social Impacts Committee at the Smithsonian National Museum, headed up by Rick Potts, the director of the Human Evolution Project there. And that group is made up of secular people and Jews, Buddhists, Muslim, various flavors of Christians. And the principles that we're sharing with you that apply to our concern group of Christians applies to people of other religious faiths also. And so teaching evolution, taking into consideration just a person who's a theist view and not necessarily a Christian, is still good educational practice, right? our job is not to convert their religion in our biology classroom. Our job is to be able to present the information in a way that's palatable to people of faith. And so that's one group. I believe that the Doser website has a lot of information just for general religious perspectives, not just Christian. So it's a developing and growing, there's growing awareness among evolutionary educators, secular and theistic, of these models.
I'm also a pretty recent convert to evolution. I just finished the evolution course at Trinity Western University. And one of the biggest hurdles for me to accept evolution was the idea that, specifically with human evolution, that if humans are made in the image of God, then why aren't chimpanzees also considered to be made in the image of God? If we are so, like, I had the understanding that we're so genetically similar to them. And if we evolved from chimpanzees, then why is it just humans that are considered to be made in the image of God? And what really sets us apart if we're just related and this essentially so similar to a chimpanzee? And how would you approach that issue in the classroom?
Great question. I have a resource that I use with my students that outlines several different strategies to address that exact question, to have the scientific evidence for evolution be compatible with a creationist viewpoint. I know that one option that I've heard is that God kind of implanted a soul into, chose one couple to implant the soul into or breathe life into humans at some point. There are many, many different ideas that kind of get at the answer to your question.
Hey, good evening, or good afternoon. Thank you. Yeah, right here. So I come from an institution that has sort of a similar incoming population, it sounds like. And just to a bit of encouragement, what I saw echoes a lot of what I hear my biology colleagues do. And I'm a chemist, so I'm a little disinterested.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I apologize as well.
Okay.
But my question is, one class of students that we see a lot of is those who have been come in with a skepticism towards evolution, but also a skepticism towards us. They've actually, I mean, and these are from our feeder churches of all places, but who are coming in sort of being told, be wary of the wolves in sheep's clothing in those faculty. And just curious how, if you encounter that as well, and how you handle it, if you do.
I'll start, and I'm sure Lauren has experience. I know Lauren has experience with it. I try to establish initially my credibility as a Christ follower. So probably at the very beginning, I'll just share about my salvation experience and some of the struggles I've had, and that I don't have all the answers, but I am very serious. My relationship with Jesus is very intense and very serious, but I'm also a very intense and serious scientist. And I just say, presenting that at the beginning and then walking my talk and being that I walk the way that I believe. And that has, I think, succeeded.
I would kind of echo that. Just demonstrating through the way that I talk to students, interact with students, and interact in the classroom that, I'm a person of faith and that I'm not here to threaten their faith. So again, kind of trying to establish that credibility as a Christian and as a scientist. I can't make students trust me, but I hope and I think that eventually students realize like, oh, she's serious.
Hi. So specifically Lauren, right?
Yes.
You mentioned that you mentioned some theology and philosophy incorporated yes. in this biology class. This is not a question. It's more of I do have, a suggestion.
Sure.
Thomas Aquinas in the Treatise on God, Articles 1 and 2, he talks about how faith and reason are compatible. And he the first article, he mentions how, what is the purpose of faith? What is the focus of faith? And then he also mentions how faith of reason, I mean, science of reason, which is doing science and investigating the world, that pertains not to faith, but pertains to God's creation, things that God has created. Mm-hmm. So he goes on to the second article, using science of reason to prove God's existence in five ways. The fifth way is, some may call it the great design argument by William Paley. And I just thought that Thomas Aquinas' treatise on God would be a perfect.
Yeah, thank you for that reading. Suggestion.
Yeah.
I do use some excerpts and quotes from different people throughout church history. St. Augustine talks a little bit about, you know, a related thing, and the Belgic Confession that I have students read. But thank you for that. I'll have to definitely look into that.
Okay. Is it a short one or a long one? Okay. Last question. Okay.
This is a little bit follow-up to the other comment about learning what the image of God is now that you learn more about science. And your class is not to teach theology or what the Bible really does teach. It's mostly to show that there's no conflict once you learn all the issues and everything, and you can still be a Christian. But do you have other courses then that parallel that they can learn more about what the Bible does teach in a way that, or different viewpoints that affirm our faith that are compatible with what we know about science and our reason?
At the university side, I'll say Lauren went through that program. Is students at Evangel take 18 credits of Bible and theology courses, the Old Testament, New Testament, Christian living, book study, Christian philosophy. So yeah, the answer is yes. How about at the Gloria Deo School?
Yeah, at the high school where I've been teaching, they have Bible courses and also a worldview, Christian worldview class, where I know that they address some of those questions. So they are getting that education in other classes as well.
Okay, let's thank Mike and Lauren for this one.
Thank you.